Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, well, welcome to a brand new Hot Spurs podcast. It is Monday, the 8th of February, 2021. I am Steve in Leigh-on-Sea in Essex. And on today's show, we have got another Steve. Steve Worrell, how are you doing?
Yeah, Steve, I'm good, actually. Thanks for asking me on. Really good.
Yeah, no problem at all. Well, obviously, I invited myself onto your podcast a couple of weeks ago. And I thought I'd return the favour. In the first lockdown, I did something called My Spurs Journey, where I interviewed some brilliant podcasters and a few celebrities, Mickey Hazard and people like that. And I had so much fun. And then I had to go back to work, so I had to stop doing the My Spurs Journey thing. But I'm at home, I am working, but I've got a spare half an hour. And I thought I'd get you on to see what your Spurs journey has been. How about that, Steve?
Yeah. I have to sound kind of flattered based on the previous roll call of people that you've had doing this already. So, well, I'm not sure that my Spurs journey computes with theirs, but we'll see.
I found you interesting. There you go. You should be flattered. Right, let's get into it then. So, first of all, your podcast is called The VAR Side.
Yeah, The VAR Side Spurs Pubcast. So,
tell us about it and how you started it and the whys and everything else.
I mean, myself and a couple of other guys got involved probably just over a year ago, just because we exchanged views on Twitter quite a lot, seemed to agree with each other, and decided we wanted to just get together and talk football. That kind of evolved, and like one of the original sort of founder members has decided to go his own way and does another podcast for himself. Two of us are still there, and we've got other people involved, and then we've kind of evolved it slightly from taking it from a podcast to more of like a pubcast, so that it's more in the in the frame of being like a few mates just sort of meeting in a pub and having a chat about football and about the game and stuff like that, and some of the feedback we were getting as well about it's a bit too sweary and a bit too jokey and a bit too laddie. So we said, well, actually, okay, maybe we'll have to reframe this so that people understand that actually, because we're lads down the pub, then that's just how we're probably going to be. So, if you listen, you understand that that's the remit, that it's going to be like a pubcast, and we just have a chat about Spurs, and like yourself, try and get people on if we can, discuss the game and just any other thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. You had Billy Bleach, Simon Day.
Yes.
I don't think you were on that show though, were you?
No, I wasn't on the show, no. Jamie was the guy that kind of got him on, knew a little bit more about him. And we kind of had this thing or arrangement where, if you get someone on the podcast or pubcast and, you know something about them, then it's probably best that you host that show because it flows a lot better. And it also happened to fall on a day that I couldn't make it as well. So I'd kind of said to them I couldn't make that day. Yeah. If they could move it, but Simon was like kind of suggested that date specifically. So they said, he's a big name. We want to get him on. We'll go with that date.
Yeah.
So I said, okay. Yeah, I don't mind missing out. And I'd missed out the week before because it was a day again. I think we'd had too many people. And I thought, well, I'll have a rest. I've been doing it and hosting it for like every week for I don't know how long, so it's good to have a week off really and just chill out and
recharge batteries. I think that show in particular really, really sort of showed what your show is all about and where it's different to others in the fact that it's so relaxed. And you just talked to Simon Day. There was no like sycophant, like I would be. I'm obviously, I'm like, you know the film Notting Hill? when is it his sister meets Julia Roberts and just goes, oh my God, I have to tell you that we would be best friends if only you give me a chance. That is me. Well, that is me whenever I see any slight someone with any kind of celebrity whatsoever, I'm straight up to them in the pub or wherever they are, and particularly on podcasts, I'm like, come on, tell us the thing that you've told everyone for the last 30 years, but tell us again. Oh dear, terrible. But that was brilliant. No, he came across really well. He enjoyed it. But the point is that your podcast is very relaxed. It's all just lads chatting. Of course, you've all got agendas because we've all got agendas. Right. So that's good. And you're carrying on with that. Varside, was that just come naturally? Did it the name?
Well, we were thinking of ideas, but when we were coming out, that was just the thing that was just about to hit. You know, the VAR was just about to be introduced, and one of the guys just said, "How about that?" It was really catchy, and just loved it. We obviously didn't think that the VAR was going to have the bad reputation that it's had, and it's not. We didn't think it was going to go in the direction that it has gone and be so controversial. We thought it was going to be something that everyone would adopt and it'd be great, and therefore it would be, you know, something that seemed topical at the time. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think it hit new heights this weekend with the West Ham guy. I mean, look, you know, we can't stand certain teams. For me, Arsenal trumps everybody by a million miles. Mm. And then it's probably Chelsea, but I can't stand Liverpool. I've got Man United fans piping up at me all the time. West Ham, pretty much, for me personally, I don't mind West Ham. And the good thing about that is when I meet a West Ham fan and I tell them, they get even more angry because they're like, oh, you hate it. I'm like, no, honestly, I quite like West Ham. They're like, arr! So, but I do think that Souček is a terrific player.
He's a top player.
Oh, he's brilliant. Yeah, and when he got the red card, I was like, brilliant. He's going to be at the Spurs game. But it's been overturned now. It's just on Sky. So, quite rightly. He was putting his arm up to just to get a little bit of room or whatever. The bloke headbutted his elbow. Mike Dean went over and looked at it about 10 times. We all went, well, he's got to turn that around. There's no way that's a red card. Walks back on the pitch and gives him a red card. I mean, that is VAR in a nutshell, the worst decision I've seen. What do you think?
Well, no, you're right. But the one of the conversations that we've had like on our show for ages is about whether, you know, because everyone was going on about VAR, VAR's crap. It's not VAR that's the problem. It's the people that actually are, you know, responsible for it and administering it. Because if Mike Dean can use the monitor, he can use the facility of having the monitor to go over and double check the situation and still come back and go, actually, no, that deserves a sending off, then that tells you that it's not actually VAR that's the issue. It's the people that are currently in charge of actually, you know, administering those rules, you know, because it was no way of sending off. So VAR's given him the opportunity to say, actually, no, there's no problem there, and he's not taking it. So for me, it seems like, you know, it's not VAR itself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the wrong way round. Because what referees should be doing is going, oh, I just missed that one. I'm just going to go and have a quick look because I've got the. And Mike Dean's prior to this one was the one person I thought that was going, I don't need VAR. I'm too good for VAR. Don't worry about it. And I'm sure he was saying to whoever was in the VAR studio, don't worry. You don't need to tell me anything. I'll watch everything. I'm such a good ref. And on this occasion, he'd seen it, obviously, or whatever, went over and then changed. And it was crazy. But I still think David Luiz deserved a red. I'm not going to change my mind on that one.
Is that not based on your, the fact that you don't like Arsenal? I listened to your. I think you discussed this last week, didn't you, with your mate on the podcast about teams you like and don't like. And it's interesting because when I used to have a season ticket at the old White Hart Lane, there was an old guy that used to sit next to me, and like he hated West Ham with an absolute. He was a lovely guy, you know. I mean, we'd have a chat and they'd be, "How are you doing? How it's been?" and everything like that. And he'd, you know, he'd be like, "Come on, Spurs, come on!" He'd very, you know. And then the West Ham, they'd read out the West Ham score, and he'd go mental. He'd flip out, and I was like, "Oh, I hate them. I can't stand them. I really, really hate them." I was like, "Really?" Like, you know, I mean, the guy must have been in his 80s, I'd say, you know, and a real hatred, like, you know. And
yeah,
I mean, I never used to really have a hatred of any team, to be honest. It kind of progressed and developed, and you kind of develop, I think, your feelings about teams based on your interaction with fans, I think. So I've got a West Ham mate, and he, like, you know, we used to be in contact quite a lot when we were younger, and as you get older, you go your separate ways or whatever, and he never used to be in contact. I've got another guy who's a Millwall fan, and we'd be in contact all the time, but my West Ham mate, nothing, don't hear from him. We both had families and everything like that, never ever contacted me to find out how my family is, tell me how his family is. And then he just WhatsApp me or message me and scream obscenities down by, you know, like just wishing Tottenham all kinds of horribleness. And I'm like, yeah, no, the family are great. And he'd be like, what? I said, well, no, my family are great. How are your family? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you haven't even asked me. You just go into it and wishing all. And I said, like, I think maybe we need to review the friendship. And he's like, well, why? I said, well, at least get the niceties out of the way first before you start insulting me about.
No, like, I'm with him. I'm with him. Straight in. Oh, no small talk.
So, he kind of learned. Anyway, he kind of learned. But I mean, I never, before that, I never had any kind of, I didn't dislike for West Ham at all. I thought they played nice football and everything like that. But based on him and his reaction, I just like, well, no, I don't like them now. You know, just like, what, you know, why would I care, like, or why would I show any interest in when, like, you know, when they've got fans like that? So, you know, it's a weird one.
It's a weird one. But anyway, what do you make of yesterday's game then? West Brom. What we'll do is we'll have a little chat about it, anything that comes to mind, and then we're going to go through the questions for my Spurs journey and have a bit of fun. So first of all, what do you make of the game yesterday?
Well, positive. I thought, you know, we started off positive. It was chalk and cheese with the previous game. Lots of energy, pressing high. We knew that we'd have more possession of the ball. So, you know, we knew that, like, the nature of the game would be that, you know, teams have two ways of approaching us, don't they? They either press high, if you're good enough to press high. So, like, you know, the top teams, like the, you know, Chelsea's and Liverpool's and Man City's and all of those teams, they'll press us high and try and see if we can play through their press. And then you have the other teams that are not as good, and they say, well, actually, our best bet is to try and see if they can break us down. And normally we just pass the ball sideways and across the back of them and never really threaten them or, you know, get in behind or anything like that. But I thought movement-wise, I thought it was a lot better, a lot more positive, totally different, for example, to Brighton, who would have set up the same way as, or in a similar way to West Brom. Sonny was running. Yeah, he was moving and chasing and harassing players like he hadn't done for a few games. I thought he'd been, like, pretty poor and pretty quiet in Kane's absence, if I'm being honest. You know, but it felt clear that Kane being back, you know, had a sort of galvanising effect on the whole team. And the poor performance, you know, mirrored that. And people like Lamella came in and had an impact. Moura, who's, I'm not Moura's biggest fan personally, but I thought he had, you know, he had an impact on the game as well. And yeah, it was good. I thought, you know, it was positive. I didn't share the commentator's view at half time that we were getting frustrated, or we'd be getting frustrated at the fact that we couldn't break them down, because it just felt to me like a more positive performance based on the previous performances. And if we could just carry on attacking or trying to break them down, that we'd get the goal at least that we needed. It was just a case of if we got a goal, would we go on and get a second and try and get a third, really, and that was, I guess, you know, that was the issue for me. So it was pleasing to get the second goal, which was typically on a breakaway. Nothing for me to moan about, should I say. I was quite happy.
Yeah, I just think that I was with you at half time. I was like, you know what, if we play like this for the next 45 minutes and don't score, and this is 0-0, I'll be happier than if we'd have come out again, given them the ball constantly, sat back, been boring, played two or three, Sissoko again, and just tried to hit them on the break and won 1-0. I'd have been like, for goodness sake, again, what the hell is this? But we came out completely different to Chelsea. You saw the video, I'm sure you did, on Twitter and what have you. Is this a training? Someone posted it. Is this a training match? And that was the first half against Chelsea. We were dreadful. Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody's saying that we're the worst. Paul Merson, first time I've ever agreed with him. We were last three games the worst team to watch. Absolutely awful, especially in view of the fact that, and I watch all the games and get myself in trouble with the missus, but I try and watch them all, and some of these games are brilliant. 3-2s, 2-2s, 3-3, great games, both sides going for it, great games of football, and then it's Spurs and it's like, oh for goodness sake, load of old rubbish. So I thought the first half was probably, and if you can remember the Newcastle performance when Dyer, obviously the handball in the last minute, but Newcastle, we played well. People forget about that, but we actually played attacking good football against Newcastle. And that was probably the best we've played since then. I know we've had some victories here and there, but we played proper football.
Would you put that down to the players, or would you put that down to Mourinho?
I always say I have no idea, and we just don't know. But the thing is, but then I do like these role play things in my head constantly, and I just I just think he's got to have. Look, I've been tweeting so much about Jose in the last week, just about what I would do if I was him, and the biggest thing was, and you heard the show last week, and I said, he's a bright guy. He could walk into the next job. Zinedine Zidane's just said he's going to leave in the summer, or that's the rumours. The chairman of Real Madrid's got his number, and all he would say is, or Jose would phone him up and say, listen, get me in the summer. I'll bring Kane and Son with me. No problem. They'll come. I'll just have a quick word with them now. So that's what I'd have done if I was Jose. And if the chairman of Madrid is listening to this, don't get any ideas. But the point is that I reckon Jose would have said to them, listen, what's going on? You tell me, what do you think? And maybe one of the guys said, we're too defensive, boss. Looked over at Sissoko and said, I'm going to be brave here and say, sorry, Musa, but we've got to play you or Holbier, not both of you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
but there's been a lot of talk in the media, isn't there? So a lot of in a lot of the interviews recently, where post match interviews or just media interviews with the club, where they're saying, well, what's happened, what's going wrong. And you're starting to hear stuff like, well, I think we're focusing too much on the defensive aspect. We're focusing too much on our defensive roles. And that's kind of like they're breaking ranks a little bit, because actually that goes against, supporting the manager and his and maybe his tactics and his style of play. But you're hearing it more and more. So Musa said it, got dropped. Right?
Well, Hugo on that, I'm a Musa Sissoko fan. And I'm happy to play the two of them together against a side like Chelsea, who are a good side. But that performance from Musa Sissoko against Chelsea was one of the worst midfield performances I have ever seen.
100%.
Giving the ball away with a 5-yard pass Can't remember a single tackle he made. Can't remember a single, you know, he's a bulldozer. He got no talent, skill, but he does bulldoze forward. None of that. And in the last 5 minutes, I think it was, he laid the ball off with no one around him, so he didn't need to do that. And then he took three steps back as if to go, well, that's my job done.
Yeah.
And that was with 5 minutes to go, 1-0 down. And I thought, that is absolutely awful. From a centre midfielder for Tottenham, do the horrible stuff because you're a horrible footballer and you're horrible to play against. But that was pathetic. Go on, Steve.
I wonder what's going through his mind at that time, because as you say, I mean, some of the stuff that he does and the change in his, you know, what he can bring. You know, we're used to him, as you say, marauding around the pitch, breaking through lines, running with the ball. Like making himself available, he's not been doing any of that, and you wonder if, you know, he's been told that he doesn't do the jobs well enough, or I don't know what it is, you know, because it's certainly a change in his whole mentality about how he tries to play, you know. And I, like as you say, you know, we were different in terms of our approach for West Brom. Brighton, I was surprised at our approach, but I do feel that Mourinho tactically tries to set us up based on the opposition. So if you look at the Leeds game, for example, we were high. We pressed high. You know, he got us pressing high and winning, knowing that they're going to play out from the back and trying to win the ball there and pressing and making them make mistakes on them press and playing out. And Chelsea, for example, pressed us high and we couldn't, and we just kept hitting it long, and it was just a shoddy performance, you know. So he would have a tactic, and I would have suspected that his tactic against Chelsea would be this low block and try and counter, but we just didn't have the players that link that. So if we won the ball, like, you know, when we win a low block yesterday, if we won it, we were able to play it into Kane because he was available, whereas when we played against Chelsea, if we won the ball, Vinicius wasn't available. You know, he wasn't taking up proactive positions to enable us to play forward. So, I'd say that, like, the way Mourinho sets up, he does it, he varies it per game, and it's difficult to watch if it doesn't work. Because, you know, the Leeds game, I think, I can't remember the game before, the week before, but the week before, I mean, we weren't great. And we probably won by one goal or got a draw or something like that. But the Leeds game looked like a totally different kettle of fish. But because we got an early goal and a goal before half time, and it puts a totally different complexion on the whole game and shows the tactics to kind of work. And then all of a sudden you're looking at our performance, go, that's a great performance. You know, I mean, we totally took Leeds to the cleaners, but we didn't really. We just picked off the opportunities that we had, you know. So and that'll be down to how he's set up, I think.
Yeah, I think we criticise our attacking players. You know, people put these lists on Twitter and say he's not good enough. He's had 8 years. He's rubbish. But actually, if you're the opposition and you're looking at it and going, right, what they've got in attack, right? They've got Harry Kane, they've got Son, they've got Lamella, they've got Moura. I'm sorry, but I think that the opposition aren't looking at that going, oh, no problem. I think they're looking going, Christ. They've got some talent there.
Yeah.
And they're very inconsistent, but my goodness, you know, are we, oh, don't worry about Moura. No, because he can turn it on.
Yeah.
You know? So just use them more often. Choose one of Holbier or Sissoko. And I'm happy to get a little bit of rotation going now because I don't want to knacker out Holbier. But Sissoko, when he comes in, he's got to be horrible and nasty and break up the play and not be pathetic like he was against Chelsea. Steve, we're going to get into these questions. Yeah, you ready?
Yes.
Or do you want to say something else?
Well, just quickly finish off. I'm just going to say, I don't think Sissoko's intelligent enough to do what Højbjerg does. Like, I don't think, like, in terms of rotation, because Højbjerg demands the ball, he can do both. So he can play, but he can also break up play. And Winks is learning from him in terms of how to anticipate where and when to try and intercept the ball and break play up. And, like, Sissoko isn't actually showing that ability at the moment. So I think he'd still need to watch. But anyway,
But Steve Warren will call it a psycho a thicky.
Not a thicky. just he needs to evolve his game.
He listens. I know he does. Right, here we go. What's the first match you ever remember seeing?
Do you know what? We've discussed this loads of times in various different places, and I cannot remember for the life of me. But the first match I remember going to is Tottenham Liverpool away in 85. And my mum took me and my mate, and we went and we won the game. We hadn't been there for years. We hadn't won there for years and years. And it was just, I think it was significant because we won the game. That's why I remember it. But I know that, yes. And I know that I've been to games before that, but I cannot remember the games that I've been to before that. So that's the one that sticks out in my memory as being one that I remember going to.
Right. Well, I mean, we've only just started, but I'm going to peel back the onion a little bit. Don't get all teary, but... Your mum took you to Liverpool.
Well, I mean, it's because of her that I got into, like, you know, into supporting Spurs and football and all of that. So, I mean, she used to go and, just me and a mate, and she took us and, like, went up by train and did, like, yeah, it was fantastic. Although I got offered out as for a fight by, I was 13 or whatever. And some grown man tripped me up and then decided that he wanted to try and fight me, which was
a Spurs fan.
No, Liverpool fan wanted to fight me. Yeah, yeah. So,
Wow,
weird bunch. But there you go.
And your mum scratched his eyeballs out.
No, she just dragged me along. Come on, let's go. She doesn't. It was great because she doesn't believe, you know. If you go into football and you expect a level of behaviour like swearing and all that sort of stuff, and I can't remember, there was a game we went to a few years later, or no, probably a couple of years later, a home game, and something happened. And I was sat next to her, and something happened, and I wasn't happy with the referee, and I jumped up and swore at the referee, and then I remembered that I was sat next to my mum. I looked at her, she looked at me, she didn't say anything. Just looked at me. I sat back down, sort of bowed my head, and that was it. That was the last time she ever took me to a game. She didn't mention football again. Yeah,
It's one of the things, Steve, that I cannot stand is excessive swearing. I'm sorry, and people will say, "Oh, what a wuss" or whatever. Yeah, no. Listen, this is not the fighting cock, boys. but it's just excessive swearing. I just think it's ridiculous. And there's this young chap that sits behind me. And it was brilliant. So obviously when we were in the ground and he was swearing, and me and my dad are like, Christ's sake, shut up. And his mum goes, if you swear one more time, and me and my dad look around laughing at his little face. He was about 25 and he was like, oh, sorry, mum. It's brilliant. But yeah, it ruined the Champions League final for me. But lucky enough to get tickets, sat there. And these two Herberts behind us would every single person, whether it was a Spurs player or a Liverpool player or the referee, every single kick, every single thing, everybody was an effing see you next Tuesday. And me and my dad was just like, we're not enjoying the game as it is, but these idiots behind, it was just so ridiculous. Yeah. And I don't swear in front of my mum. And because I got told off when I was about 8 years old, and I still don't. But I tell you what, though, Steve, if I was and I've been on holiday and a couple of leery people nudging past, and being a bit leery, I go and get my mum, not my dad. I'll tell you that. My mum kicks ass, that's for sure. What's the match, Steve, that made you cry?
So now I listened to this on one of, like, you know, on one of your previous pods, and I don't think I've ever cried at a match. I don't think I've ever cried at a match, and I don't know if that makes me kind of emotionless or what. I don't recall ever crying at a match at all.
Let me refresh your memory. Spurs 5, Arsenal 1.
Yes, I was there.
You must have
semi-final.
You know, semi-final. The bottom lip, surely.
No. No, that's just, for me, that's just pure unadulterated joy. I mean, that's, you know, I've even got the T-shirt. I've got one of these sort of silly replica T-shirts or whatever. But no, that was not tear inducing. I very rarely cry.
Ajax?
No. Didn't cry at that either, I don't think. I don't think I did. I'm trying to think back, and I'm pretty sure I didn't. No, I was, I think I was more in shock than anything else. But my missus would give me absolute grief. Like, you know, if I shown more emotion about football than I do in my normal life.
I've got it. I've got the goal. It's a goal. And you definitely shed a tear, right? Ready?
Yeah.
When Pele scored that overhead kick in Escape to Victory.
No.
Come
that's
on.
Just, again, that's just wonderment, isn't it? You'd think, look at that and go, that's just top quality football. But no, tears.
You've got heart of stone, Steve. No.
It'd probably be one of my grassroots games, like one of my girls' team, like when they've achieved something. But no, not professional football, no.
All right. What about the funniest match you ever saw? And I'll give you a little one. There was one recently when Leno come running out and handballed it. I was on the floor laughing. And I had to tweet Arseblog, who does a brilliant podcast, and you won't listen to it. I listen to it, so you don't have to. But it's a great podcast, and he absolutely despises Spurs. And they call, like, whenever we, like, lose, they say it's delicious and things like that. Oh, it winds me up. But I just had to tweet him and say that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. What do you think?
Well, that is probably one of the funniest things you've ever seen, actually. But I can't
know. Naeem from the halfway line, that was pretty funny.
That was pretty funny. That was a joy. I think that was, that probably rank up there, maybe. I would have thought.
Right, let's move on. What's the worst match you ever saw?
Now, I can't remember the exact game, but I know it was, I think it was an Arsenal game at White Hart Lane, and we were getting absolutely tonked. And I've gone with my son, and he was one of those people that if we're getting battered, and we don't look like we're going to score, he's like, right, should we go? And I was like, do you know
my
what?
Boy does,
we will go on this instance. We will go. So I think we were halfway down, and I think we were halfway down. I think we'd actually gone out of the stand via the east stand. Down the steps and onto the pavement, and there was a loud cheer, and my son and half of the stand that had left had to run back in for the last 2 minutes because it looked like we were actually.
I think I know what you're talking about. Was it when Jenis got the goal in the last minute?
It might be the game, and we everyone's flooded back in.
This is uncanny because we were only 2-1 down. But we were so bad. It was under Martin Jol. And do you know why I remember this? Because I did exactly the same thing. But luckily, what I used to do was if the game was so bad, I would leave but see the last couple of minutes on the screen. So there'd be these TVs in the gantry. And then as soon as the final whistle, I'd leg it down the stairs. But for this one, I mean, it's Arsenal at home, only a goal down. But we were so bad, you're quite right. We were never going to score. No. And then all of a sudden, Jenis and the gantry was packed, like absolutely rammed. And I remember everybody jumping up with joy and flicking Vs at the screen because the camera went straight to Arsene Wenger, who couldn't believe it.
Steve, for that game or the Bayern Munich game, the 7-2 was it?
In the most bizarre circumstance whereby we played the best we'd played in the season, in the first half, we were brilliant in that first half. Should have been about 5-2 at half time. We were fantastic. And then, but no one remembers that, of course. And why would they?
Because the second half was so poor.
They just kept scoring. The saving grace was it was an ex-Arsenal player who they should have kept. Although the Arsenal fans were delighted about that. What have you ever been at a match or watched a match and it scared you? Apart from getting tripped over in Liverpool.
No, apart from that game, I think the only game that I say scared me, just kind of frustrated me, was the first game I took my son to at White Hart Lane. So I'd taken him to a couple of local games where I am, and I thought, well, you know, I want to get him into football, but it's probably not going to be possible to get to White Hart Lane on a regular basis. He's quite young, get him into the local team. And we kept going to the game, and like, you know, he just wanted to go. It's like, all right, can I have a burger? Yeah, right, here's a burger. Right, all right, I've got the burger. Can we go now? It's like, well, no. So like, well, when are you going to take me to Spurs? So okay, I took him to Spurs, and it was Man City, and we were sat in the Park Lane, but we were quite close to the away fans, and it was more intimidating for him, because we sat down, and there was this big massive guy. I mean, massive guy.
Yeah. How old was your boy at the time?
He would have been 2008, so he was 8 at the time. Yeah. And this guy just like looked at him like, oh, great, I have to be my best behaviour. And you know, we just had like, obviously you just have like the Man City fans were just throwing insults like for 90 minutes at us. I had two idiots that turned up about 10 minutes into the first half, and they spent the entire game looking at the Man City fans, cursing them and swearing at them, and just like, one of them was just the row in front of my son. And then like 10 minutes before halftime, so they turned up 10 minutes late, 10 minutes before halftime, they buggered off to get a beer or 10, come back 10 minutes into the second half, and continued to just hurl abuse and insults at like the Man City fans, who obviously held insults and abuse back. I think we won the game. And like, you know, at the end, they've turned around to me and go, oh, great game that, weren't it? And I'm like, I was furious. I mean, like, you know, the lad next to, you know, let's say the guy next to me, he'd gone to great effort to make sure he didn't swear, didn't, you know, wasn't abusive or nothing like that. He lost his temper once at the referee, turned around to me, apologised. But, like, you know, on his best behaviour. And then you've got these two idiots that were just, like, you know, they're just...
Do you know, you're at... again, you have to, like, a good old swear up is great in the right context. And I do that with my mates and blah, blah, blah. And
yeah,
I've got to say that I've been going to Spurs, 91, luckily enough, was our first season. And I do remember I was sitting there and there's a lovely lady sitting next to us. And I'd been sitting next to her for a couple of years, and you know, a few years after, but I remember swearing, and I turned immediately to her and I said, "I'm so sorry," and she just went, "Oh, it's okay," but I was out of order, but it was fine, and people have done it to me, like with me and my boy, and they swear, and you go, all right, and they go, oh yeah, sorry. It's the people that look at you and go, whoa, it's a football match.
Yeah.
And you think, I know, but just say, or walk into the ground, or sometimes we'll be like, me and my boy, like you say, like we'll go. We used to park at the sports ground where the women play, and we would I can't remember what it's called, but it's about 15 minute walk from the ground.
Yeah.
You go past. Yeah. Do you know where I mean?
Yeah, I do. Well, I played there. I haven't played there. My daughter's team played there when we played against
it's where,
Spurs.
It's where you,
Frankie,
you come over
Frederick,
the bridge.
It's Frederick School or something like that.
Yeah, you come over the bridge, you go around there and you park in there. It's about a tenner. Go into the bar. And it's really nice. And I was just sitting there, and this group of lads came over, perfectly nice guys, all different ages, between 20 and, say, 50, sat down, three of them, and all of a sudden, one of them just goes, oh, effing this, effing that, right? And I'm with my boy, and he was about 7 at the time. Mm. And I've looked, and all three blokes have looked at me and then carried on the conversation. Not one of them sort of said, oh, sorry, mate. Or hey, keep your language, little fella there. Just carried on. There's lads and there's lads, but come on. It's just, so we got up. They took our table. We got up and we went somewhere else. Cause I was like, oh, come on. But so you've had that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not nice. You know?
No. Right. Okay. Hang on. I've got to get back to my phone here. Right. Here we go. Next question. A player that you used to love, but you don't anymore.
Well, I mean, there's only one answer. I'm not going to say his name. There's only really one answer. I'm not apart from him. I mean, I don't mind any of the others that have kind of gone on because they've gone on to. There's not one player apart from him who's left, there's no one that's going to leave on good terms.
Talking about Gary Lineker, right?
Yeah, Gary Lineker, terrible. Yeah, but I mean, you know, we all moan about
him and his blooming lefty views, trying to make the world a better place. What an idiot!
But you know, I mean, everyone moans about Modric and when Bale left and how Berbatov left and all of that. You know, no one is unless you. Come to the end of a contract like Vertonghen, for example, I don't see there's going to be anyone that's actually going to leave on good terms, because at some point you're going to have to, make a decision to say, well, actually, I need to leave, or I want to leave, or the club are saying we're selling you, or whatever. So, you know, people like, you know, Berbatov and all that have left, and they've all gone on, you know, to win stuff. It was just, you know, that idiot that's gone down the road and the way he did it and what he meant, as you said last week, and what he meant to the club at the time and everything, which is probably...
He was the world's best defender at the time on a free contract. He could have gone absolutely anywhere. And he'll defend himself by saying that, oh, he won the double, he won this. Yeah, you would have won that at Man United as well. You would have won that at Barcelona or Real Madrid. You would have won it anywhere because you were a brilliant defender. Why did you go there?
But do you not think the thing that sticks with me over the years, and even though I say, you know, you kind of don't begrudge some of the, well, you do begrudge some of the players, but like where, and they're doing it now with Kane, like, you know, he needs to go, where's he going to go to, Sonny, where's he going to go to, but if we'd had and kept some of those players, you know, where would we have got to if we'd had those? And I don't know if it's just because of the management or the owners and not, you know, being ambitious enough. But I remember bumping into Teddy Sheringham before he went to Man United. I bumped into him on Oxford Street. And I stopped him. I was like, oh my God, it's Teddy Sheringham. Oh my God. Teddy, I'm a Spurs fan. Are you, what's happening with you this summer? Are you going? And he's like, oh, you know, I don't know. And obviously he knew by then what he was doing. Oh, I don't know. And he's off up and left. But you look at the players that we've had, and you think, right, well, actually, you know, if we just convince them that we, you know, we want to build a team around them and we're going to just invest and get the right support in players, you know, we would have been, you know, all of these players have gone on to win stuff elsewhere. And it's not just because, you know, that they haven't improved by going elsewhere. It's just because of the supporting players that they had around them. So why, you know, if we'd had that support, we would have been, it's just, that's the frustrating thing, I think, for me.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. Sheringham looked at it and said, "Look, Alex Ferguson wants me. Man United were miles ahead of anybody else, and it was like guaranteed." I know the first year he didn't win anything, but then obviously done the treble. Didn't play a lot of games, but obviously played in the important games. And the only thing I was thinking about Kane when they were talking about it on Match of the Day last night And Janice sort of said, well, to Alan Shearer, why did you play at Newcastle? And Shearer said, well, I'd already won the title. And I would have said to him, well, okay, so if you hadn't won the title at Blackburn, would you not have played for Newcastle then? You know, and give your honest answer. And he might have said, no, I would have gone to Man United then because I was trophyless. Or he might have said, no, like a bit like Matt Letizia, no, I was incredibly happy at Newcastle. I was worshipped at Newcastle. I could play whenever I wanted, apart from when Hurlitt came along. But you know, that's the thing with Kane. So Kane can go. He can go to another club, but he'll spend a lot more time on the bench. He won't. You know, he might be worshipped. But let me put it to this way: where's he going to go? Because Liverpool can't stand him. Constantly slagging him off on Twitter. Man United.
I know, like, before you carry on with that, and you're right about some of the other clubs, Man United and that, but, you know, the fact that Liverpool can't stand him, I disagree, okay? They can't stand him because he doesn't play for them. We hated Thierry Henry. We all hated him, but we didn't actually hate him. We just knew that he was a really good player and he played for our enemy. I don't think, Steve, that we ever said
we don't want Thierry Henry. Liverpool fans literally say we don't want him,
but they would take him if he signed, and they would worship him. I reckon.
Of course they would. But why? The point I want to get to very quickly, because we've got to end. My boy's got to be back on this computer and do his science work in a minute. Right? Is that if you say to Kane, right, you're his agent, and you say to him, right, you want to win trophies? Where do you want to go? Well, first of all, I reckon we know Kane's home life, don't we? Mm. He's got a lovely wife who's a childhood sweetheart, three kids now, okay? Is he going to say to her, right, we're up sticks, we're going to go to Barcelona? I don't think so. Same with Madrid. I don't think, you know, that they are. I think they're very homely people. I think he's, you know, and I'm just guessing here, but I think his wife is probably somebody that, you know, has got real brilliant support for mum and dad, and they love where they live and all that sort of stuff. That's number one. Number two, where are you going to go? Right. So you choose. All right, I'm going to go to Man United. Well, Man United aren't necessarily going to win anything. I'll go Liverpool then. Well, they're not the only side who are almost guaranteed to win something is Man City. And you know who's going to go to Man City this summer? Haaland.
Yeah.
100%. That Haaland is going to go there. So that's them, done their money.
Exactly. The one thing I'd say about Kane, and this is, I guess, comes back to some of the other players that I've spoke about in the past if they'd stayed there. But, you know, he's effectively, as we say, one of our own. And it would mean, I think, so much to him to be the one that brings silverware and glory back to the club. You know, I think winning, you know, if he went, for example, from us to, I don't know, Man United and only won a League Cup, that means nothing. But if he wins a League Cup for Spurs, and he's the one that brings a cup to Spurs, that means more to him, even though everyone looks down on the League Cup. If he wins an FA Cup for Spurs, that will mean more to him than winning it elsewhere. If he wins the Europa League for Spurs, that will mean more to him than winning it elsewhere. If he manages to be the one that actually leads us to Premier League glory, that would mean more to him than achieving it here than it would elsewhere. And if Mourinho and Levy can show him that we're moving in that direction, that actually it's a realistic aim and not just a, you know, a pipe dream, then I don't see that he's going to actually want to leave.
Yeah. What player do you defend? Everyone thinks he's rubbish, but you think he's all right.
Present player, I would say Aurier, probably. And I have, there's a guy that, he's a West Ham fan, and he runs my football club, but he follows Spurs because he says we play really good football, but he thinks Aurier is absolute rubbish, can't defend, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and I'm saying, well, actually, no, he's improved. You know, he wasn't, he wasn't, I say, great, but I think he's definitely improved. I think discipline wise, I think he's improved. So I think Aurier is probably the one that I feel that I end up defending more than most.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? We bought Doherty, and at the time, I'm not just saying it, but I thought, do you know what? If Aurier can get it through his head that he's a good player and don't do any of the silly stuff, then that will push him on, and it kind of did. I'm hoping that Doherty does what Davis did in a way. Like, Davis was very, very poor in his first season or two, but then he's just a solid player. And you know, something with Doherty, say it three different ways, is the fact that he's not someone that's going to throw a strop, is he? He's going to look at it this summer, after this season, he's going to go, right, this is my career. What am I going to do? And I hope he really steps it up. So I wouldn't rule him out either. We've got to get through these questions, my friends. So let me just do the last couple. What is your favourite football match?
My favourite football match, certainly of recent times, is the Dortmund game. There's a Dortmund game at Wembley that we won. I think it was the first one time that we played them. It's absolutely fantastic game, fantastic atmosphere. I was sat away from my normal season 3-0. Ticket at Wembley. Yes, I think that was the one. Yeah, and I had next to me, there's a couple of guys that were really chirpy early on, right? Really chirping away, and they were obviously Dortmund fans. And as the game progressed, they got a lot quieter. And so that kind of added it to it for me. But we, you know, we played well. So that game, or the Real Madrid game at Wembley as well.
Well, that game, we were terrible in the first half, or Dortmund were brilliant in the first half. And then the second half, Sun got a great goal. Vertonghen, probably the best match he ever played for us. And what really did it for that match was the last goal, Llorente, 3-0 up. You're like, that is brilliant. And then, of course, we went away. And again, Dortmund were magnificent, brilliant attacking play. And then Kane broke free and scored. And, I mean, the mighty Dortmund. And we absolutely buried them. Apart from Spurs, who's your favourite football club?
I'm going to say Luton. Local team.
Are you from that neck of the woods?
No, I'm not actually. I'm actually from South East London. So my actual local team.
Oh, hang on a minute. Whereabouts?
New Cross. Yes. So just down the road from Lewisham. And like,
Steve.
That sort of way. Yes, mate.
Steve, I spent every Saturday night from the age of 18 to 27, 28 at the venue.
No way, really? So I never went there. That wasn't
Saturday
my scene,
night.
Wasn't my scene. I don't know how old you are, Steve, though. So I think you might
Hang
be younger
minute.
Than me.
Not yours, I not your scene. Out. Didn't you like six floors of cheesy music?
No. Do you know were you around that area when Southside used to be at Clapham?
No.
Okay, so I used to go out of the area. I used to go to Clapham and go to Southside. You pay like, I don't know, 15 quid entry or something like that. And then you get watered down drink for the whole night. So that was my, me and my mates would go there and it would just be like, yeah, it's great. Great crack. So, yeah.
I used to go to the Grand, was it Grand at Clapham?
Yeah, I've heard of
Infernos.
That, yeah. It sounds like. See, I'm wondering if Inferno is where Southside used to be.
Let me ask you this: Were you quite a cool teenager and early 20s, or were you like me, a complete cheesy? You were cool, weren't you?
No, I'd like to think I was cool, but I wasn't. We all like to think we were cool, surely. I knew I wasn't cool.
I used to go to the venue, and you could pretty much get ABBA all the way through if you went from floor to floor to floor. But I can't believe you never went there, not even for a laugh one night.
No, because people, I mean, everyone used to be like dressed very gothy and and stuff like that. When I used to go past the queue,
that was a Friday, Steve. It was gothy on a Friday. Saturday was so I grew up in Bexley.
Okay.
And we used to get a cab or train up to New Cross.
Hold on. So if you grew up in Bexley, did you never go to you never went to Dartford, to Zens?
No, I went to went to Dartford Zens. Yeah, every Thursday.
I went there one Saturday. I had a mate that lived in Bexley Heath. Went there one Saturday with him and fell asleep underneath the speaker. I never went back again.
we used to go to the training rooms or the polo bar in Bexley Heath, and then we'd go to Zens, where you had to wear trousers, shoes, tuck your shirt in, and me and my mate, I was more like into rock at the time, so like obviously we didn't like the music, but we stood at the bar and had tried to enjoy ourselves. But I thought you were going to say, did I ever go to Dartford football? But no, my local club was Welling United.
Yes, I tried out there. I had trials there. And,
did you?
Yeah. So when I was sort of 16, I thought I was quite good at football, and I wrote to all the clubs in London and the South East, and they said, well, you need to be we don't just see players. You need to either. Like, actually, I was still at school at the time when I wrote. So they said, you either need to be playing non-league or you need to be playing, like, for the school team. So I spoke to the school. They said, no, we won't do that. So I contacted Welling, and they said, yeah, come down for a trial. So I went for a trial, but I wasn't on the phone. I turned up for pre-season, did a couple of pre-seasons, and turned up 1 week, and there was no one there. And I'm like, well, where is everyone? And there was a guy who said, oh, are you so-and-so? He said, yeah, they've been trying to get in contact with you all week. They've had a friendly today, and they wanted you to turn up for the friendly, and they'd already gone. So I was like, right, okay. And that was it. I just gave up. I didn't go back. And I was like, well, you know, when you have one of those things where you should have even needed a bit more guidance or some support or something, and I shouldn't have just given up. So that was
what year are we talking?
Like, I was 16, so that would have been 1988.
And that was when Welling were really doing well then.
They were happy to take people on, and I tried out at Bromley. So, do you know, like Bromley, when before Bromley got, because they're obviously Bromley are a lot bigger now than they were at that point, but tried out at Bromley, tried out at Dover, was it not Dover? Sorry, what are they called? Fisher
before,
So I knew
Steve,
a
I'm
lad
loving
from my
this,
school. You got to go, you're gonna have to go.
It's 1:19, and my boy's got a lesson at 1:20.
Oh dear, okay, right, okay.
This has been terrific.
No problem.
And we will have a part B.
Fantastic, yes.
I haven't even got through all the questions.
Sorry, mate.
What a laugh. All right, mate. Well, look, I've got to go, but we'll do this again. Come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs.
Cheers, matey.
See you later, mate.
Bye. Bye.